This is the Hot Out Hoops podcast postseason edition. We made it to the NBA Finals with last night's Game 7 victory over the Boston Celtics. And I'm with Diego Quesada, my fellow Hot Out Hoops writer. How's it going, Diego?
It's going well. How's it going with you?
Well, it's going better than it was just a few days ago, right?
When after Game 5, the sky was falling.
After Game 5, oof. It's to be expected, you know. It's the playoffs, so after every loss, there's going to be questions with this Heat. But now with finally big three back together, how much of an impact did Bosch make in this series in those last couple of games, and what can we sort of expect from Bosch going forward? Because he's obviously going to be needed against the firepower of the Thunder.
Yeah, I think you saw at the end of Game 6. In Boston, right after LeBron was in the middle of, you know, a great, great playoff performance, one for the ages, I think you saw him on a couple of possessions try to get Bosch the ball. I think he made a jumper. He got another time when he got a trip to the foul line. And I think that was just a wise move to just get him a little bit into a rhythm. And I think you saw it in that Game 7, the first Game 7 in his entire career. He was very good. I mean, in the first game he got back, he really couldn't make a jumper. This time he wasn't missing. And, you know, it just goes back to how I think people who said that when the Heat were doing well without him against the Pacers, they said, oh, well, maybe he's not needed. I really thought that was very simplistic. I mean, you just see how many ways he affects the game on both ends of the floor. I think for a good part of this series, you could say that he's had more effect on the defensive end of the floor, getting blocks, getting steals, and using his length against Kevin Garnett, who was really just having an easy time against Haslam, who's 6'8", compared to Garnett, who's 7 feet. And then he has made those threes that Eric Spoelstra told him to work on over the summer, and I think he showed why. Getting some of that range out to that three-point line was useful because you do get that extra point on that three-point shot.
We weren't really talking about, as a key to a game, corner Bosch three-pointers. We weren't exactly doing that in the last podcast.
Yeah.
You can probably count them on your hands, how many three-pointers he's made with the Heat. So to see him go 3 of 4, I think, right?
Yeah, but he's hit some big ones. I mean, he hit a big one over the Hawks in that game without your two best players. So, I mean, and I know that when I think the story came out at the beginning of the season that Spo wanted Bosch to extend his range, I think some people said that they wanted him to work closer to the basket as opposed to farther away. I actually thought that it was good to have him put that three-point shot in his arsenal just because that extra point that you get is so valuable. I'll put it to you this way. If a player shoots 4 for 10 on two-pointers, you get 8 points. But if you shoot 3 for 10 from beyond the arc, you get 9 points. Although you're shooting a less or a lower percentage, you're getting one more point for your team on the same amount of shot attempts. So I think that shows you the value of that three-point shot. I mean, we all know that he's a great big man shooter, and it looks good when he's making that 20-foot jumper, but if you just take a step back, you could get that extra point, which ends up being valuable in these playoff games.
Well, and another thing to go along with that is you kind of appreciate Bosch now that he's finally back, and it's been a few weeks now, but you immediately see it, like you were saying, on both ends of the floor. Even things that, you know, obviously not everything shows up in the box score. So even if it's just a tipped ball or just making Garnett at least alter his shot just by his presence alone. I mean, he's not Tyson Chandler as far as defense goes. But when you're dealing with the Heat that is so short, somebody with his skill and footwork can make a difference on the defense end. I mean, and just grab rebounds too. Everything is needed with the playoffs. Every player has to play up to their usual excellence, but they have to give more too. This is something that is a great confidence builder for them to go through the Celtics the way they did and the way they overcame the loss of Bosch in the beginning of the series. And now that they're complete, I think it was good that they went through the Celtics personally. Then maybe what would likely have been maybe a 5-game series against the Sixers. What do you think? Do you think overall that makes them a stronger team, or are the Heat, no matter what their opponent was in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, I mean, I think I when it was Game 7 of the second round, Sixers against Celtics, I actually wanted the Celtics to win. I know that some people thought that the Heat were quietly rooting for the Sixers. I don't think that Pat Riley was rooting for the Sixers, to tell you the truth. But I wanted the Heat to play the Sixers just because I felt that the Heat would get amped up to play the Celtics. And that I felt like if they played the Sixers, they might have left a game slip away, not really gone into it with the fullest amount of effort and intensity. And, you know, there were some games against the Celtics where, I mean, you even go back to Game 7, the Heat just had a lot of sloppy turnovers. I know that they're amped up, they want to win, but you did have some errors against the Eastern Conference opponent in the Eastern Conference Finals. But I think it was a good thing to go through these last two rounds of the playoffs and respond to the adversity that was faced. I mean, most of the time, I mean, other than the 0-1 Lakers that swept through the first three rounds of the playoffs, I'm pretty sure that a lot of championship teams have gone through some pretty tough battles. I mean, we even saw when the Celtics won their championship in 2008, a below 500 Atlanta Hawks team took them to 7 games in the 1-8 matchup.
Mm-hmm.
And then did that deter them from beating the Lakers in 6 games? No, it didn't. So, like I said, I mean, I think that it was good for the Heat to come out of this. I mean, you can look back and say, oh, well, if the Heat just do a couple of things here and there, maybe they don't lose game 4, maybe LeBron James doesn't foul out in that game, and who knows what happens there. But, I mean, you just take the game as it is, and you just try to respond to what the situation is, and I think the Heat have done a good job when their backs were against the wall of responding to the pressure.
Definitely. It was quite a ride, and now we're looking forward to this Thunder matchup.
Yeah.
Do you see Spoelstra doing anything different with the rotation? Do you see Bosch still coming off the bench?
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I wanted to talk about this issue of whether the Heat should bring Bosch off the bench is because after the game, LeBron James said it is unique to have Bosch come off the bench, but he gives the Heat something off the bench that they haven't seen in 2+ years of playing together. So I think that was an interesting statement that the leader of your team says. But to tell you the truth, I think you should start him. I mean, I know some people say maybe if you keep him off the bench, maybe you can have Battier guard KD, LeBlanc guard Ibaka, and that would sort of, I guess, give LeBron a breather on the defensive end of the floor. But I think maybe you should start him. I think you will see Battier spend some time on KD throughout the series, in part to LeBron James arrest on the defensive end of the floor. But I think part of the reason why you might want to start Bosch is to maybe bring Joel Anthony into the rotation. He didn't play in Game 7 at all, and he only played for a few minutes in the fourth quarter of Game 6. But I think against a team that doesn't really have, you know, a Roy Hibbert, Andrew Bynum, Dwight Howard type of player, he could be useful. And, I mean, Kendrick Perkins is not a guy that you throw the ball down to in the post and he goes to work. I think he's just as likely to turn the ball over as score. So I think maybe Joel Anthony could have a role in this series. That would be the one name that I would say as far as the rotation. And another name I would say is Mike Miller. I mean, it just seems to me that he is really running on fumes right now. He had some good moments in Game 6 of the Indiana series when he hit a few threes, but lately he has really struggled to make that open shot, and it almost seems as if the Celtics have been willing to give him that shot, but they paid more attention to James Jones when he's in the game. And I think that's part of the reason why James Jones has been playing a little bit more, because Mike Miller really isn't giving you a whole lot. I mean, you saw him in Game 7 on one play, you know, a 35-year-old Ray Allen with bone spurs in his ankles took him off the dribble and drew a foul, and he went right by him. Ray Allen went right by Mike Miller. So that would be something to keep an eye on, because I think if the Heat are going to win, maybe they do need one or two games where Mike Miller or maybe James Jones get hot from three, because Battier, you know, he hit four threes in Game 7 last night. He hit a few threes in Game 5 against the Indiana Pacers. But I think you've seen throughout this series, he's been very inconsistent with that open three-point shot. So I think you're going to need somebody else to step up. But I just don't know if Mike Miller is capable of doing that right now, because, as I said, it looks like he's really running on fumes at this point.
Yeah, lost in the news about the victory was that Bosch was the only reserve to score at all. And that might be because the other three, Miller, Jones, and Norris Cole, only played nine combined minutes. Do you see this bench being able to keep at least in production, up to pace with the Thunder's bench? Do you see it's going to be even more of the big three being featured on the offense, and there might be a few points to spare for Chalmers, Haslam, maybe Jones, and maybe a reduced role for Miller. I mean, there's only so many minutes to go around.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Heat won't win a lot of the whose bench is scoring more, just because the Thunder have James Harden coming off the bench. I think there are some games where James Harden could outscore the Heat bench by himself, assuming that Bosch starts, of course. But to tell you the truth, I don't think the bench is going to be that big of a factor, because you could practically say that James Harden is a starter and Thabo Sefolosha is a bench player. I know he had one good game against the Spurs, but he's not really an offensive threat. And as far as the rest of the bench, I mean, Nick Collison or Derek Fisher aren't going to swing any playoff series, just as Norris Cole or, you know, James Jones or Mike Miller. None of those guys are going to swing a playoff series on the offensive end or the defensive end. So I wouldn't really overstate the bench. I mean, I think you saw a team in the San Antonio Spurs that everyone said had a great bench, and it was this great bench against this one great six man, James Harden. But I mean, I guess you could say that towards the end of that series, Greg Popovich really did shrink his bench and play his starters a lot more minutes. But that's neither here nor there, because the Spurs aren't in the finals. But I wouldn't really read too much into whose bench produces more. I think it's going to come down to the stars and defense.
Besides the going down 0-2 with the Spurs, have the Thunder really been tested in the playoffs the way that the Heat have? And do you think that has any bearing on the actual finals, as far as, you know, and also taking into account playoff experience from both sides?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you can say that they have gotten tested, but it's been a different kind of getting tested. I mean, they played two close games in the first round of this of the playoffs against the Dallas Mavericks at home, and yet they won those two very nail-biting close games. And then they play the Lakers, and I think you could easily say if a couple of, you know, bounces go here instead of there, the Lakers could have easily had a 3-1 lead on the Thunder instead of vice versa. So I think in terms of getting tested, they have done a good job of, when they're in a bad spot in a game, like, for example, I think it was game two against the Lakers, down 7 with 2 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in that position, and I mean, some of the fault does go to the Lakers, because I think they did turn the ball over a couple times.
Yeah, unforced turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did show that they are ready, and it's going to be a pretty tough series. And, you know, it's very interesting how D. Wade said at the beginning of the season that it's title or bust, yet the Heat are going into this series as underdogs. I mean, I think the majority of people who I have seen have been picking the Thunder to win this series.
Is that some sort of, like, locker room material for the Heat? Because I don't think they really care either way.
I mean, yeah, but I mean, the Thunder have played very well this season. I don't know if it's locker room material at this point of this of the season. I don't know if there's really any more motivation that anyone needs. Right. I think that in spite of the fact that the Heat are going in as an underdog, if you look at a player like LeBron James, I think if Kevin Durant wins a championship before James and he wins it against him, I think that would be very bad for James's legacy. And I think he knows that. I think he knows that he has to play well in the finals after averaging, I think it was 18 points in the finals last year. So I think he knows it's about the chip. It's all about the chip. And I think he said at the MVP press conference, all I care about is winning a championship. So, I mean, like I said, I don't think it's locker room material. I think that LeBron James, D. Wade, Chris Bosh, all of these guys have enough motivation. They want to get that championship. And the fact that they are underdogs, I mean, they are going against a very worthy opponent. But I think that they're in it to win it.
Do you think that the individual brilliance of LeBron as well as Durant, do they kind of cancel each other out more or less? And it might come down to those, you know, the second or third or fourth best player on either team making those making the kind of production that can give the superstar of the team, so to speak, get him the ball in the right circumstances, that, you know, these games are going to be tight, and that's when Durant or LeBron will be defined, their legacy, you know, how they play down the stretch.
Yeah, I don't think that they will end up canceling each other out. I would give a slight edge to James just because James, I mean, if you look at their games, those two players, Kevin Durant is by far the better shooter. He can get a shot over anyone because he's 6'10", long arms. But if you look at a guy who can affect the game in as many ways as James can, he's on a level of his own. I don't know if, for example, I mean, it was funny. I was watching the game on ESPN Game 7, and they said LeBron James has zero assists. And then 5 seconds later, he kicks it out to an open Bosh in the corner for that big three. I don't know if, in terms of finding other guys, open guys, Kevin Durant can do that. Or on the defensive end, I think LeBron James is on a whole nother level.
Yeah.
And, you know, in terms of rebounding, of course, we all know that KD is pretty skinny. I don't know if he'll be able... I don't know if he would have been able to, like, I mean, I think you've seen over these last two series, LeBron James has been called on to grab double-digit rebounds, and he's done that pretty consistently. I don't think KD could have done that. So I would give a slight edge to James. And I think that, I mean, I think what you'll see is KD versus LBJ, Russell Westbrook against D-Wade, maybe Bosh and against Harden, or, well, I know that's not an actual matchup, but he'll probably be going against Ibaka. But I think this series will be decided by which team is going to come up with the necessary stops. Because I think, like you said, these games will be close. So I think it's just a matter of which team will be able to get stops, which team will be able to execute. And I think this whole moniker of the Thunder being a jump shooting team could end up hurting them, as opposed to the Heat, who really try to get down into the lane, go to the free throw line, and maybe kick it out to open other three-point shooters. I think that could be the thing that tips the series, the Heat's way, if they're able to break down the Oklahoma City defense, get some easy buckets, and then you have, you know, Russell Westbrook living and dying by the three-point shot. I think Miami would take that. I mean, I think you even saw it last night. I mean, there were a couple of times when Ron or D. Wade would just go in for uncontested layup, uncontested dunks, excuse me, in the half court. I mean, I know that when a team has a dunk in a half court setting, that really means that your other guy isn't rotating over, but there were some really wide open dunks. I mean, I don't know if Garnett was just too focused on Bosch or if he just, I don't know, but there were some really open dunks in the half court.
That was surprising because the Celtics are a disciplined team, and throughout the series they have been pretty tight with that. I mean, they've been able to seal those kind of lanes off for Wade. Wade has, you know, struggled with that, especially in the first half,
mm-hmm.
and he's been reduced to I don't even know if I would call it just jump shots, because there are those twisting turnaround jumpers that they just weren't going to go in. Those are mm-hmm. very difficult shots that Wade was attempting, and I don't see that kind of as good as the Thunder are. I don't see them being that disciplined as the Celtics are on defense, mm-hmm. and I could see that. I mean, the Thunder are a dangerous team, but also like the Heat, they have their moments where, you know, you could make a run at them. But having said that, we were talking before the podcast about this 2-3-2 series format.
Mm-hmm.
As a visiting team, of course, you want to try to get a split, but it's so difficult to win those three games at home in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of almost expect the fact that this series is going to go down to maybe 6 or 7 games, and both of those games are in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to have to come up with one or two remarkable road wins to get the trophy.
Yeah, I mean, I know that some people might look at it and say, well, in 06, the Heat won the championship without home court advantage because they were able to get those three home games in the middle of the series. And then when the Heat did have home court advantage, they lost in the finals, of course. But, you know, I do agree with you. I think the only two times when a team has swept those three games are the Heat in 06 and the Pistons in 04. So I think the formula for Miami is to get a split on the first two and then win 2 out of 3 so that you can go back to OKC up 3-2. If you go back to OKC up 3-2, you're in great position. So that's the formula that the Heat have to try to execute in this series. Get a split, win 2 out of 3 at home, and then go back to OKC up 3-2 and try to close it out. And that's what I think is going to happen. My pick is Heat in 6, and that's what I think is going to happen. If they're going to win this series, I think you have to steal one of the first two, because if you go down 0-2, then you really have to get those next three games. And I know the Heat did it in 0-6, but, I mean, like I said, the only two times when that's happened have been the Heat in 0-6 and the Pistons in 0-4. And the Pistons that year were just beating a team that was really imploding in the L.A. Lakers. So, I mean, unless you have, you know, I mean, two of those games in Miami were really toss-up games. So, I mean, it's almost like your only hope of winning those three games is if you're playing an imploding team, which I don't think the Thunder are doing anytime soon.
No. No, quite the opposite. The Spurs were the one that I don't know what happened almost. It was just a complete domination out of nowhere. But basically, well, it was a 4-game sweep for the first two games. Before that series started, what did you think was the scarier matchup for the Heat, the Spurs or the Thunder? And what do you think, you know, obviously afterwards, did the Heat overall match up well with the Thunder?
Well, I thought either team that came out of the West, I think you could look at it as it would be strength on strength. I mean, for example, if the Lakers had beaten the Thunder, I might have been a little more worried. just because they have those 2 7-footers. But in the case of both of these teams, both the Thunder and the Spurs, their principal offensive players are perimeter players. You have Duncan. Well, I mean, not even so much. I mean, it's mostly Parker and Manu for the Spurs at this stage. And then on the other side, you had Westbrook and KD and Harden. So I think it is strength on strength. I felt like maybe the Heat did match up a little bit better with the Spurs just because the Thunder did have Perkins and Ibaka, whereas the Thunder had Perkins and Ibaka, and the Spurs just had Boris Diaw, Tim Duncan, who was older, and then you had Blair and Splitter, who weren't, you know, really going to get you a whole lot. So I felt like maybe the Heat might match up better, but then you also have to deal with the fact that, I don't know, I mean, for the 20 games leading up to their basically 4-game losing streak, it didn't seem like there was a difference between the Spurs' first unit and their second unit, especially with Manu coming off the bench. So my pick, I thought that the Spurs were going to win the series in 7. I felt really good about my pick after the first 2 games, but mm-hmm. We obviously know how that series went out. And I was surprised to see a championship-caliber team in the Spurs with, you know, that championship DNA, to use a Spo quote, really crumbled to the Spurs. And I do think that Greg Popovich made some errors in that series, but that's neither here nor there. In terms of, to answer the second part of your question is, what do I feel afterwards? I mean, I feel basically the same way. I think that, like I said, it's strength on strength. And while I do worry a little bit about Perkins, he did have that one good game against the Spurs. I mean, I think it was that one game. I think it was game 4 of the Western Conference Finals. Or it might have been game 3, I think, whichever one it was. Both he and Ibaka played really well. I think that was the game that Ibaka shot 11 from the field. But at the same time, I mean, I don't think that Perkins is going to be as damaging to the Heat as Tyson Chandler was last year. So I think you have to keep that in mind. And you also have to also say that Ibaka is a good, I mean, he was, you know, a first team all defensive player. He has a jump shot. But I think, you know, even though Garnett is 36, Garnett's a better player than Ibaka. So that's what you have to take into consideration also.
I agree. I would say before this series started, the Western Conference Finals, I thought the Spurs were going to win in 7 as well. And mm-hmm. You could have kind of seen a little bit of a parallel between the Spurs and the Mavericks. And maybe it would have been that kind of a matchup where Popovich, it would be Popovich kind of being the Carlisle, older veteran type coach against Spoelstra. But now you have Brooks, and he's another young coach. That coaching matchup is way different than Spoelstra versus Doc Rivers as well. What mm-hmm. do you think of how the two coaches match up?
Yeah, you know, I wrote an article after game 5 how I felt like the criticism of Eric Spoelstra was really unfair. I mean, I just after that game 5, you saw Chris Broussard and Stephen A. Smith just really go after the coach, pretty much crucify him, which I thought was really unfair to him. To tell you the truth, I think Chris Broussard has been trying to get Spo fired since the Heat were 9-8. He's been on his case ever since then. But like I said in that article, I think those people, and even on Twitter, you know, some people who said that they were Heat fans, you know, blaming Spo, I felt that they were really being too simplistic about a situation that you could really attribute any number of things as to why the Celtics were down 3-2. And, you know, I'll just point to in game 7, the Heat took 2 crucial timeouts. I think one was after it was a nip-and-tuck game up, you know, all the way going back to midway through the 3rd quarter when the Heat were able to close that halftime deficit. That's nip-and-tuck. neither team had a lead of more than 2 points for a good deal of that game. I think there were 20 lead changes in this game, which is a lot. And all of them happened in the first 40 minutes of the game. The Heat call a timeout. They were able to get some buckets. Then they call another timeout a few minutes later. They were able to get some more good possessions, continue to clamp down. I think that was, to me, those two timeouts that Spo took, whatever he said, it had its intended consequences on the court. To me, that's what I look for in a coach. It doesn't have to be, you know, when there are 30 seconds left, one play. But, I mean, I really do think that Spo is a very good coach. I think he's gotten a lot of unfair criticism from some of the other people like Chris Broussard, as I said earlier. And in terms of how I think this series will go again with Brooks and Spo, I think that you may see... It'll be interesting to see who Thabo guards. I mean, I think he could guard Wade a lot, but he also could guard LeBron a lot, just to maybe, you know, with the same thing that the Heat would do and putting Battier on KD, just keep him rested on that defensive end of the floor so that he can have more energy on the offensive end. But, you know, in terms of coaching, I think it won't come down to coaching. I think it'll come down to the players.
Yeah, I agree. And it'll be interesting to see with Spoelstra, what does he do with, like, a player like Joel Anthony? He didn't play at all in the last game, but he's somebody that could have that kind of Ibaka type role on defense. And and you know, I'm going to be the first one to admit it, but he's been kind of decent around the basket, and he has had a couple of games during the postseason where, you know, he's managed to score a couple of times as well. But doing those little things that everybody appreciates Joel Anthony's game for. But those, do you think, if it's not the coaching matchup, you obviously have the superstars on both teams that are going to get those highlight type plays. But what about those kind of players like Joel Anthony, Ibaka, Derek Fisher? They may not swing the series either way, just based on a performance or a final game play situation. But those are also the kind of players that could have those type of moments, like Jordan passing to Steve Kerr.
Yeah, I think that Joel Anthony can have a role in this series. I mean, I think I said earlier that maybe starting Bosch would get Joel Anthony a more natural role in the rotation, because, I mean, I think at the end of the first quarter, you pretty much have LeBron James playing against four subs, and it's usually only one big guy. And I think that one big guy, if you start Bosch and Haslam, would be Joel Anthony, as opposed to if you had Bosch come off the bench and then, you know, he'd come off the bench midway through the first quarter, and then Joel Anthony never gets to see playing time. And then I think that's what happened in the last two games.
Yeah, and you have to give minutes to Haslam, because he's been a monster on the boards.
Yeah.
He's shown a couple of games that his mid-range jumper it's been shaky all season, but he's managed to hit a few buckets when the Heat really needed them.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that Joel Anthony will have a role. I think Miami will pretty much rely on their starters, who are Chalmers, Wade, James, Haslam, Bosch, Joel off the bench, and then I think Battier is another guy. I'd pretty much limit it to those seven guys, maybe Mike Miller / James Jones. But like I said, we have to see, because Mike Miller is really running on fumes at this point. But on the other side, I mean, you mentioned Derek Fisher. He's known as a guy who can hit big shots. Both of these teams were, you know, reported to want him at the buyout deadline. But to tell you the truth, I don't know if he'll be on the court in those late game situations. Because, and I'll tell you why. In Game 7, I think you really saw who Spo trusts. He only played six guys after halftime in that game. His five starters in Bosch. And when it was really close, you know, when the Heat made their run, the Heat had the big three, Haslam and Battier. I don't know where Derek Fisher would fit in on the defensive end if he go to that lineup. I mean, I think in terms, if you're the Heat, you would say Wade would guard Westbrook. You would either put LeBron or Battier on KD and whichever one is left on Harden, and you put the other two guys on Ibaka and Perkins respectively. But if you look at that, if you look at it from the Thunder's perspective and you have Derek Fisher in that lineup, I don't really know where Fisher fits in if you have Westbrook on the floor. I mean, if the Heat are just going with, you know, basically one guard in Wade and then a bunch of forwards, I don't really know where Derek Fisher would fit in. Which is why I know he's hit some big shots, but I just don't know if he'll be on the court in those big moments when the game is close in the fourth quarter, which I believe it will be, if he'll be on the court to actually make that shot.
And then you have a player also like Chalmers, too. He's taken kind of his game to a different level in the postseason. And he's shown before, obviously, in his career that pressure doesn't really affect him in these kind of games. And you kind of need that. I think Russell Westbrook obviously is a more dynamic, more talented player. But he's got kind of that bravado that you kind of... You have to have somebody like that. You can't have a passive point guard. The Heat have definitely had point guards like that they just kind of just bring the ball up the court, just give it to one of the big three, and then you could just, you know, that's it. That's your job as a point guard. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't really work like that because the Heat, they don't have that kind of veteran point guard backup like the Thunder do. It's going to be either Chalmers or Norris Cole. And Norris has actually been, you know, somewhat decent in limited minutes this postseason.
Yeah,
he hasn't been a wreck at all.
His poor
stretch that he had pretty much throughout most of the second half of this of the series. I'd say that's the season. Sorry, I'd say that's behind him. But
yeah.
You know, just like you were saying with Fish, I don't see Norris having a big role at all. But if Chalmers can continue to be aggressive, and he's shown to be pretty decent, you know, finishing at the rim, that's what the Heat also need. They can't just rely on Chalmers just being proficient from long range.
Yeah, and just to add one thing, if the Heat do put Chalmers in that crunch time lineup, so to speak, then I think you could see Fisher there. But if the Heat go back to what they did in Game 7, which is have Wade as your one guard, and then you have a bunch of forwards, you know, LeBron, Battier, Haslam, Bosch, all of those are forwards. I don't really know where Derek Fisher fits in. But like I said, if it's Mario Chalmers instead of Battier, then I could see Derek Fisher on the court. But, and you know, whether he makes those shots is another thing, because... he's going to need either KD, Harden, Westbrook to draw in that double team so that he can get open. But, I mean, I think it depends on who is that crunch time five. And I think four guys are... I think four guys are pretty much locks. You have the big three and Haslam. But, you know, maybe Battier will get in, but maybe also Chalmers will get those minutes in the crunch time moments of this series.
Okay, so that about wraps it up, Diego. It was educational, and we're gonna see what happens in game one, and hopefully we'll have the entire writing crew over at Hot at Hoops / Peninsula is Mightier, and we'll get everybody together and we'll discuss what happened in game one.
Yeah, we can talk all day long, but there's a reason why you play the game.
Definitely.
So we have to see what happens once the players hit the hardwood. But it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. All right, man. We'll talk later.
See you.